You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the Game, yeah, Building the Game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today's, well, what is today's date? It's March, is it going to be the 8th? Is it the 9th? Jason's checking.
7th.
The 7th. Today is Monday, March 7th, 2016. You're listening to episode 197. I know, I'm sorry we sound like garbage again. Michigan weather has been a beast, and we haven't, hasn't been safe to drive and connect in our normal way.
It has not been at all, not in the times when we need to meet,
right,
at least. So.
So we're recording in our janky way on a lunch break at our office. So, yeah, sorry about that. I'm sure it'll be much better next week, unless we have another blizzard.
Let's hope not, right? I mean,
we've had enough.
Done with that jazz.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, so it's been a while since we chatted.
It has.
Is this the first episode we've recorded since the Saloon Tycoon Kickstarter went live?
For a real episode, like, it is.
Yeah, holy crap.
Just bonus episodes.
Wow. Yeah, so that's a thing.
That's what happens when you're 2 weeks in advance of everything.
Yeah, that's a thing.
So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah,
how's that going? It's not going very well, I saw.
It's kind of a travesty, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, didn't even fund.
Actually,
in the first 24 hours, it took almost 48.
Yeah, yeah. So we just passed 47,000 as of this recording, because we're actually recording this on Friday.
Hopefully, by the time you're listening to it, you've passed 50,000.
I hope so. I think there's a good chance. There's a good chance. So that's super cool. We are now the biggest Kickstarter in Van Ryder Games history.
It's pretty awesome.
Which is fantastic and exciting. And yeah, I mean, so I did a little math. So we got, as of this recording, we got 11 days left on the campaign. And in our first 11 days, we made almost 41,000.
Yeah.
So if we can repeat that,
that'd be pretty spectacular.
It'd be pretty cool, yeah. And knowing the last 48 hours is always the biggest.
Indeed, yeah.
It's
especially when it's going well.
Yeah.
That helps a lot.
Yeah. It's conceivable that we might touch 100K.
Be nice to see. It'd be pretty exciting.
I mean, I'm not getting my hopes up.
I just at least want to see you cross 70.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, in case you guys missed it, we got to announce earlier this week the $70,000 stretch goal, which is actually still not on the campaign. The only way to learn about this right now is to be a builder and listen to the show.
Yep. Now, when you're listening to this, it may have been updated.
Well, that's true. Hopefully it has.
But because that would mean that you crossed 50,000, so.
Right. But, yeah, the $70,000 stretch goal is Scorpions.
Yep.
Yep. Calamity Sam, adding a character and a tile. The character is Calamity Sam. The tile is the Scorpion Farm. There will be actual scorpions in the game box.
It's pretty exciting stuff.
Only for Kickstarter backers. It's an exclusive. There's never been a better time to jump on board with Saloon Tycoon.
And I just want to say to the builders out there, let's just rap for a minute about this.
Let's rap.
We're not actually going to rap, but let's just think about this for a second here. You know, the scorpions in the box thing started because we said something dumb on our podcast. That literally is, if it hadn't been for that.
Okay, you said something dumb on our podcast.
I want to take all the credit for the awesomeness that is happening now with Saloon Tycoon. But, you know, so anyways, dumb conversation on our podcast turned into, turned into something that affected the course of a game, which I think is cool, right? Like,
yeah.
There's like, I said this to Rob, you know, I mean, if you believe in yourself, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Let's say you want to, you know, you don't think you can get that promotion, scorpions in the box. You don't think that you could figure out time travel, scorpions in the box. Interstellar space travel, scorpions in the box.
Yeah.
Anything you want in your life ever, scorpions in the box.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's sound logic.
I mean, I think so, too.
I can't think of anything wrong with that reasoning.
I will now believe everything is possible because of scorpions in the box.
Scorpions in the box. Now, you said that the course of the game was changed because of things that we said. I mean, the entire course of that game from the very beginning was shaped by things that we talked about on this podcast. So, don't... Don't undersell our influence on that game.
That's true, but I mean...
That game would not exist without this podcast.
So. Right. Well, I mean, but, you know, I'm just saying, Scorpions in the Box.
Scorpions in the Box, it's true.
Best thing ever.
It's huge.
No, I was super excited to hear it. I actually... Rob was going to tell me directly, and then we didn't get to see each other, so he just uploaded the episode and said, hey, listen to this episode before you post it, and I did, and I was pretty excited.
Yeah, you said you cheered in your car while you were listening
to it? I did, because I just threw it out of my car. I was on my way home from a meeting, and it was later, and I actually responded to you, but it was like after 7, so you were probably in bed, so.
I think it was later than that.
I think it was like 10, but.
Yeah. That would have been after my
so time. Yeah. Oh gosh, Ted. I went to bed last night at 1.
Yeah.
Got up at 6.
I went to bed at 9:30 and then read till 10:30, and that was too late. I don't feel with it today.
That's what my wife is like.
Yeah.
She's like, I need to be in bed by 10:30 at the latest, and I'm like, I'm just getting started.
Yeah.
Let's do something. Let's get some stuff done. I can't like stay up and watch a movie. I have to be working on something, otherwise I will fall. Or playing a game, but yeah, you know.
Yeah. Time for a correction from last week.
Oh.
So I said that Terra Mystica is, the box says is 30 minutes. I read that wrong. Terra Mystica is 30 minutes per player. That's what the box said. So I'm sorry that I screwed that up. And I'm sorry to the thousands of people who contacted me to tell me that I was wrong.
We have received Twitter messages and emails.
Yes.
And a voicemail.
Yes.
To let us know
that I was wrong
all about this.
So I apologize to Z-Man Games for misunderstanding what I read, and I don't know what I can do to make it up to them and to all you guys out there, but please know that I'm sorry.
Yeah, so people were upset. Just here's in your defense, so I just want to say this.
Sure.
Who puts that on a box? Like 30 minutes per. I've never seen that before.
I've never seen that on a box before, but it makes sense to do it that way. Because if the length of the game really is that closely tied to the number of players, then it totally makes sense.
But it's just weird. Maybe they should put that in bold.
No, I'm not going to be critical of the graphic design.
And I shouldn't either. Oh, I'm not being critical. I mean, I just don't want to be like, there's no other games to do this, because now we're going to get a bunch of messages to tell us that we're wrong, and there's like 40 other games that do this.
And I think I said that we spent an hour and a half playing the game with 3 people, and so which means the box is completely
accurate. It's exactly accurate.
Exactly dead on the nose.
Because I thought about that afterwards. I was like, wait a minute. I think you played with 3 people, and you said an hour and a half.
Yeah.
The math works on that.
So yes. So good on you, Terra Mystica. The only complaint that I had was completely unfounded. It's a good game. It's a good game. Well worth your time. I think the other thing I said in talking about my friends that I was playing with is that I said they like big Euros and like they like to play Twilight Imperium. And in that statement, I implied that Twilight Imperium is a big Euro. And
it is not.
It is not.
It's a big game.
Right. And that my intention was to say that they like big, complicated experiences that take a long time to play. And I did not mean to imply that Twilight Imperium was a Euro. So I apologize. Boy, I really screwed up a lot in that part of the show last week.
It happens.
So people
we've done it before. We'll do it again.
People were very adamant that I be put back in my place.
So the good news is people like Terra Mystica.
Yeah.
They want it to be right.
It's a darn good game. It was fun. It was cool. And I'm intimidated by the idea of playing it again with different characters.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it can get pretty heavy, like a lot heavier than I experienced already.
Speaking of games that are intense and lots of stuff going on, here's a game that doesn't have that, but revolves around a game that does, so I'm not just trying to change the subject, kind of, but...
okay.
There's this game a friend of ours at work told me about. It's an app. I don't know if you can get it for other than iPhone, but it's on the iPhone. Called Super Tribes.
Yeah.
And have you tried it?
I have.
It's fun.
It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's like mini Civ.
It's exactly what it is. It's mini Civ.
It's Civ, but you only get 30 turns.
It's mini Civ Revolution.
Yeah. 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 You only get 30 turns.
It's not mini Civ 5. It's mini Civ Revolution.
And the only thing that you are trying to do is get the highest score possible. The only critique I actually have of the game is it doesn't save your high scores, which is really stupid.
It's really stupid. If it's a game about reaching a high score, and it doesn't retain what your high score is,
So now I have to try and remember, like, okay, I've only played it twice. My last high score was, like, 7,700. So I'm just trying to remember that so that I can try and beat it. Because, like, that's the whole point of the game.
Yeah.
So instead it just shows you everyone else's high scores, which are way ahead of wherever I am, because they've been playing it for a while and are probably better at it than me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm honestly just kind of doing things. I'm like, oh, I've never studied mathematics before. I guess I'll just do that.
So it didn't click for me the way it has for some other people. It's a good game. And it's that little Civ itch, you know, but like if I want to play Civ, I don't want to spend 20 minutes playing the whole game on my phone. I want to play Civ Rev on my PS3, or I want to play Civ 5 on my computer.
Right.
And that's how I like to play those games. And if I'm going to do that, I'm going to devote several hours to it, and it's a more rewarding experience. So, it's a good game. It's not my thing. I might, like, when I play games on my phone, I like short games. I like a game that I can play for 3 minutes, you know? And maybe I didn't finish it,
right?
But I can come back to it easily 10 hours later and continue for the next 3 minutes.
You know what game you should get?
I don't know what.
Sticky Balls.
Sticky Balls.
It is a game. It's one of those, you know, like, quick play and die. Like, there's a ball, and it's just moving forward on the screen, and there's a bunch of platforms in your way, and all you do is hold down, and the ball turns into two balls, which split equidistant apart, and when you let go, they come back together, and that's all you're trying to do, is just fly through there and avoid things, and you can play it 10 times in 10 minutes, sometimes even more than that if you do poorly, because... shorter games will last like 30 seconds. So.
All right, I'll have to look at
that. And it's free. Totally free. There's some ads, but no big deal. Yeah. You know?
The best game that I've played on my iPhone completely, and I can't imagine anything ever beating it, was Desert Golfing. Desert Golfing is so good. It's so, so good.
Is it like actual golf in desert?
It's just a simple... it's a simple game of... you're hitting a ball across a 2D plane or a 2D surface. It's variation to it. And it's just a matter of aim and velocity. You know, how hard do you want to hit that ball, and at what angle do you want to hit it to get into the cup? And you want to get the lowest score possible. But it just goes forever. It goes literally forever.
So you get a ball in the cup, and then just boom, next round.
Next round. It's just instant. It's instant gratification. It's just simple little sound effects. The graphics could not be more basic, but it is so incredibly satisfying.
Cool.
I think I got to, I don't know, like whole, I'm whole 500 and something right now. And I'm just so stuck. And I probably haven't played it in 6 months because I just can't get past. I think I've probably got like 80 strokes on just this one hole, and I can't beat it. And I know it can be beat because I've read stuff online where people have gotten past that. But... yeah, you know what? I think it might be actually be in the 700s that I'm stuck. Well, 700 something. Anyway.
I'll have to check that out.
Desert Golfing's good. It's like, I think it was like $2. Worth it.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, we should talk about a top. Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say, I wish that I could reset the hole that I'm on. I suppose I could delete it and re-download it, and that would probably reset my progress.
Unless it's in Game Center. Well, then you just say remove from Game Center, but then you have to start from scratch again.
That's okay.
Oh, because you just want to keep playing. Right. Yeah.
So maybe, gosh, I should really.
You should look. There may be a nuke button in there. Sometimes there is just a reset button.
There's no menu. There's no menu.
Oh, then yeah. Then your best bet would be if it's not in Game Center, remove it. Yeah. If it's not in Game Center, you delete it, re-download it, it will start over.
Yeah.
If it is in Game Center, you just have to say remove from Game Center, and it'll lose your file.
Like, I was paranoid about losing my progress before, but now I kind of think that's the best choice I could possibly make, just so I can do it again.
Right, so you can play some more.
Yeah. Anyway. So, topic time.
So, we owe you guys an Unpub update.
We sure do.
I realize we didn't do one in February. It kind of got away from us, but that's fine. We just want to do 4 updates before Unpub. So, we'll do this one, and then we'll do another one in the near future.
Yeah.
Probably last week of March, maybe first week of April, depending on how episode 200 falls. So, one thing about episode 200, we're still trying to decide what we're going to do for episode 200, and some people have been giving us ideas. Nothing that's really struck a chord yet, but keep those coming. We appreciate that. We were able to redo our schedule because of the snow day last week, so we're only recording one episode this week. Normally do two. So next week we're going to be recording episode 198, 199, 2 weeks from there. So 3 weeks away, we'll be recording episode 200. So we still have plenty of time to get ideas in.
Mm-hmm.
Love to hear what those are.
Yeah.
So Because we want to do something, you know, something that feels organic and is fun, but we care what you guys' opinion is, so by all means, tell us. I think my favorite one was, since you guys can't seem to focus on a topic and you talk about random things, maybe you should just pitch the plot to the next Star Wars movie. Which is fair.
Sure.
Honestly, we could probably make it awesome.
It's not bad. You know. Now I want to do that.
Yeah.
And now I want to skip the topic today and just talk about that.
Well, we're not going to.
We're not going to. We got to stay focused. Yeah. Unpub. Back to what we're getting ready for that and how our progress is going. Why don't you go ahead and start? Because I think you have a lot more to say than I do.
Yeah. So I've been working really hard on finishing one game to bring. I would ideally like to have a second game as a backup in case I get tired, but. I do think that I have a second game to bring just to get some fun feedback on when I get a chance, and that's my Hip City game. I'm just going to bring that as a backup for when I get bored. I only have a tag table, unfortunately, which means I probably won't get bored. I'll probably just wish I could play my game more.
Would you remind people what Hip City is? Because that name change was fairly recent. I don't know if we talked about it.
Yeah, so Hip City was started out as the River Mighty, then it was Drafting the Drafting Game. And Drafting the Drafting Game is what really helped me find Hip City, meaning as the title. That game is a lot of fun. It's really simple mechanic. Mm-hmm. It leaves you wanting to play more. It's you're drafting cards, trying to build the most unique city or the hippest city. Mm-hmm. And you do that by cards come out on a board, and you can either draft them or you can play cards instead, and you only get that option. And once everyone's taken a turn drafting or playing, all the cards from the board left over go to this scrap pile, which is how you score by playing a card and matching it to the scrap pile, and then you score a multiplier based on the number of cards there. It clears it all out. Next person goes. Lots of fun. A lot of really mean decisions in the game. Mm-hmm. I got to play it recently with some friends. I added in some specialty cards that just change the game up just a little bit. There's only a couple of them in the game, so the probability of them coming up doesn't happen that often. But when they do, like, there's a card that allows you to match to anything, and you score 0 points, but it clears the stack. And I drafted that off the proposal board and just held it for 2/3 of the game because everyone was always terrified, and they were jumping the gun because they were so afraid that I was going to just nuke a pile and they were going to lose a bunch of points and get screwed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finally did. Like, finally something came up and I was like, all right, good enough to screw this person, played it. It's worthwhile to make a play for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then moved on. So, so that's been a lot of fun. But the game, the main game that is going to be my game that I'm going to be showing there most of the time is right now, as of this morning, titled Minecart Madness. And that is my racing game from Grand Con that has made a lot of evolutions. Mm-hmm. From us playing it together, mostly. So the idea of the game is you are racing mine carts through a mine, and there's 3 lanes, and you are collecting gems as you go, and you don't actually pick the gems up, but the gems power you as you go across them, so whenever there's a gem that matches your symbol and color, it lets you move across it for free, and the other thing you can do is you can swap out pieces of the track to enhance the gems.
Yep.
So some of the main changes, let's talk about the main changes for that game. One is the title, because it finally has a title, other than Mine Carts. And I did spell cart with a K, because like Go Kart or like Mario Kart, you know, so whatever. But it does feel a lot like a Mario Kart game. So what I've changed is the game now starts with you've got 10 playing carts, which each have 6 squares on them, 2 wide, 3 tall. So 3 lanes you're mm-hmm. driving in, 3 lanes. Those start as just tracks with holes in them. A lot of the tiles actually in the next version of the game will have gaps in them on that side.
Okay.
That's done purposely to really encourage you to flip the tiles over. So what you can do is you can pay one of your energy on a turn, and there'll be five tiles off to the side that are face up, and they have gem side up. So there's gems on the tiles and fun stuff to do on the tiles, and you can actually pay to pull out a tile no one's on that's plain and swap in a new tile. And then that tile that was playing gets flipped over, and on the other side of that tile is the fun side. So that's now face up. And that works in reverse. If I were to take out a tile somebody put in that was the gem side up, as I'll call it, and then that flips over back to the other side. And I do that so that you can't immediately move something and somebody just buys it and puts it right back. You know,
yeah.
I want your removal to mean something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big change, and that's working really well. Another big change is in a two-player game, you do not play as single player. You play with a team. So I race 2, Rob races 2, and then you score points when you win instead of first place winning. First place scores 5 points, second place scores 4, third place scores 3, and fourth place scores 1. When you do it that way, what ends up happening is you could win first place, but if the other guy gets second and third, they win the game, they score more points. It just adds kind of a fun dynamic, and you and I really liked that playtest. That worked really well. I decided I'm going to have standees made, small standees from the Game Crafter, because that'll just give it a little more visual flair on the table.
It's just better usability, too.
Yeah. And, so that'll have a picture of a minecart with a gem on top of it, just for the purpose of making it easy to track as well. Then the colors all match.
Yeah.
What else has changed? Oh, I added in power-ups, kind of like Mario Kart blocks, except for what
the
happens is...
Blocks.
Yeah, the question mark blocks. At any given time, there's just 3 out, and you can just purchase those with your energy to use it. We also added a punch-it card. The punch-it card is a card that you can burn, so you play it once and you throw it away. And that card allows you to... It's designed for rubber banding, like in Mario Kart, so that if I'm in last, I can catch up. And I just reworded that card last night because I'm working on a nicer prototype for Unpub. Now it says, discard this card to move one space... to move the number of spaces equal to the position number you're currently in, plus 1. So if I'm in first place, I can use it and burn it to move 2. Which isn't very good. It's just like running the regular go-go-go cards. But in a pinch, maybe it's worthwhile, right? So I thought that way it's not dead in your hand when it's in first. But it can be a waste. And all the way down to fifth place where it's going to let you move 6. So if you are in last place in a 5-player game, you are going to just jet ahead of everyone. And that's the point, right? It really shows that this is the rubber banding, guys. Like, that's what this is for. This is the catch-up mechanic. And you can use it once in the game. You got to think about how you use it.
Yeah.
One of the problems we found was if everyone, the first player sometimes, like first player would make their move, and then immediately on turn 1, second player would use it, and they could move 5, right? And it would give them a big advantage on turn 1 when they had lots of energy to burn. And we didn't want that. So you and I had talked, and that was kind of a good way to get around that, was to just have it be... your place explains how much you get. So that way, if I go second, it's not worthwhile. But if I go last, then maybe I do want to use it on turn 1 and just boost ahead of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of any other changes I've made to it. That's quite a few. I think that's about it. Oh, I got rid of switch tracks. Switch tracks were confusing everyone.
Yep.
And when I was trying to do the art, it was also a huge pain. And it just made me think, I'm like, why am I doing these switch tracks? Like, they confuse everyone. Because what it was is you could pay 1 energy to jump a track, and that was a free move. Or if it was a switch track, you didn't have to pay, but you still moved as part of your turn. Well, so actually paying the 1 to jump the track was an advantage. There were times when you'd rather do that because it's a free space. So now it's just pay 1 to jump the track as part of your move.
To move to
an adjacent lane.
Right.
Because you can't go 2 over.
Right.
And it's not a free move. When you pay, it's part of your move. So if I rolled 5 and I go 1, 2, spend 1 to jump the track, that's 3, mm-hmm. 4, 5. I'm really happy with that.
Yeah, that simplified that a lot.
Yep.
It's just better.
Also made the artwork way easier.
Because
now all I have are gaps and tiles. I mean, gaps and track. And I got that set up on my computer right now in Photoshop to do that. I did the cards in Word. Only because it was just easier, and I could copy and paste that into Photoshop if I needed to upload it to Game Crafter. But I was the cards for the track, I really want to do those in Photoshop so that they can be, you know, higher quality and I'd like to get it off in Game Crafter. We'll see if I can do that in time. I think I can. But worst case, I'll have a nice looking colored prototype.
Yeah.
Even if it's printed in card sleeves, I'm not super worried about that. If nothing else, I'd like to get the track and the standees. The cards you play with are less important to me.
Sure.
So
I
may end up ordering them in pieces if I need to. And then if the cards show up on time, awesome. If they don't, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty happy with that. it's a strong game. It's playing really well. It's one of my favorite designs that I have right now.
Mm-hmm. It's good. Yeah, it's good. I like it a lot.
And it's, you know, I think the best thing I can say about it is it's everything it's intended to be, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
It's a fast experience. It's not complicated.
Yeah.
But you can hose people really bad. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of decisions when you're trying to figure out what to do. It requires a good deal of strategy if you want to do really well. But it, in the end, it's, you know, I feel like you always have an option. And that was important. That was one of the other things we changed. You used to get one energy each turn. Now you get two, and that was your suggestion. Because we were finding that if somebody burned all their energy, then on the next turn they had nothing they could do to change their status. Whereas now they have two, and heck, they could swap two tiles in front of themselves and give themselves free movement, possibly.
Possibly, yeah.
So, yeah. So I am super-duper happy with it. And, yeah, so we'll see. I'm hoping that at Unpub I can get all the good feedback I needed. Hey, maybe I can show it off to a couple publishers. I feel like it's in a state right now where it's sellable.
I do too, yeah.
With some development. I think, you know, I mean, there's some development for it on some of the abilities and stuff, but I think it's in a state where a publisher wouldn't look at it and say, that needs too much work, you know. My personal, but I think that's, you know.
Yeah, I think it's very approachable, and I think it's, yeah, it's definitely in a shape where somebody could pick it up, I think. So. Absolutely.
So how about you?
Oh, boy. Well, so we had a game night a few weeks ago, and it was the first time that I managed to play Smithereens with four players. I mean, just I'll get right to it. It was terrible. It was really bad. So the Smithereens was a game about
it still is a game.
Yeah. It's about pulling apart this engine. You start the game with an engine, and instead of building it up, you tear it down, and you make the decision about what to ditch at what time. I like that concept in theory, but in practice, it's just kind of a bummer. And everything that I did, everything that I added to the game, and every adjustment I made was basically to try and add in ways to make that feel less cruddy.
Right.
And that wasn't going to happen. And after playing with four players, and so when I played two-player games, they were over quickly enough that I didn't really pick that up as strongly as I needed to.
Right.
With a four-player game, once we got to about the 45-minute mark and no one was having any fun, it was clear that it was not a fun game. It was certainly something that we could have continued doing, and it was working mechanically, but it was not fun.
Right. You know, I think that was the hardest thing that I had with that game, was there was always a point where it was just, let's just shoot at each other until someone crashes.
Exactly.
And that is, yeah, that was, I enjoyed it, but in a four-player game, I would not, because, like, you go, I go, you go, I go, but when it's you go, and I wait.
Yeah.
And I wait, and I wait, and oh, now I get to go, and then I wait, like,
right.
And if my turn, nothing good happens on it, like, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, so that was, it had overstayed its welcome, and it was time to let it go. So, I'm done with Smithereens, I've put it down for good. I'm going to put it in the same box as Rocket Wreckers.
All right.
It's done now, and it was, and I've learned a lot from that, and I'm thankful that I did it. But it's done now.
And so this is a good lesson here.
It is,
just to say for a minute, two things: one, you knew when the game was done, and two, you know, one of the things that we've learned, I think, is one of the most important things about a game is not overstaying its welcome. Because you can have an amazing game, but if it overstays its welcome, guess what? It's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if you can't find a way to do that, make it not overstay without fundamentally changing the game, what's the point? You know? Because you have to fundamentally change the game, just make a new game and steal from yourself some pieces, which you very well might steal some pieces from that, you know?
Yeah, some maybe point, sometime,
some,
yeah.
Some mechanics that you like or something.
Yeah. Or even some of the narrative hooks that I was putting together.
Yeah.
For thematic stuff, yeah.
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 So, sorry. So, what are you doing now? What are you getting ready for Unpub
now? So, what I'm getting ready now, because the other wrinkle in this is that, you know, when we got Unpub tickets, we got tag tables.
Mm-hmm.
I then got on the waiting list and last week got the great news email that I got upgraded to a full-time designer table. So my spot on the waiting list came through. So now I don't just have a tag table with no game to bring. I have a full-time table with no game to bring.
Well, hey, anytime you don't have a game to show, I would gladly take your spot and show the game that I have.
Yeah.
We're actually seeing this is a lot like the opposite of last year.
It is, yeah.
Where I had Ramblers, which at that time was signed, so I was looking for feedback, but I wasn't like out there trying to sell. And that's what you were. You had two games that looked really nice that you were trying to get people's attention with. And you did. Yay!
Right.
So now we're kind of the opposite because you've been so busy working on other things. You devoted so much time to Smithereens and then found out that it wasn't going to work. And
yeah.
That is a hard position to be in.
It hurts. It hurts a lot. So I'm basically committed at this point because I have to turn in... I mean, we have to register our games with UnPub by the end of this week.
Yeah.
So I'm basically committed at this point to bringing the game that I'm going to be pitching today on this episode.
I figured you would pitch this game.
Right, because I haven't talked about this on the show at all. Like it or not, this is what I'm committed to. And this is another one that I've prototyped it and made some revisions, and I play tested it, I think, 3 times with only 2 players. And I need to desperately get a 4-player game in.
Right. This game, I think, will scale better with 4 players.
I do too,
sure.
But game length is still a concern for me.
Yeah. There are some simple ways in this game to shorten game length. Like, with Smithereens, you'd be like, well, I could just make it shorter to crash. But, like, then the game feels too smushed,
right? That's
right.
No fun.
And then a couple of really easy hits could, like, win the game for you early on. And then all that setup feels like crap. But
yeah.
With this, I feel like there's ways to adjust.
I think there's opportunity for that, yeah. So it's kind of hard to talk about it without just rolling into the pitch.
No, I think that's great. I mean, I think that's... builders, any objections? No? Okay, good. Let's do it.
Okay, so this game is called Galactic Scrappers.
Yes.
Galactic Scrappers. The idea thematically is that the players are salvage people in outer space. And they're on their little... spacecraft, and they get reports of derelict ships that are floating in outer space, and they want to be the first to get out there and scrap them and salvage whatever materials they can from them, and then move on to the next spot. Okay, and they do that salvage with a team of robots. They have little robot workers that go out there and actually crawl around on the outside of the spaceship and pull things apart and pull resources out of them. That's kind of the thematic concept there. The way you play the game, this is inspired. I think I've talked on the show before about how I like about liking Pompeii, and I like that changeover moment in Pompeii. But I also like moving pieces in that game, and it's a unique movement style I haven't seen anywhere else. I mean, maybe there are other games that use it. I don't know, but that's where I know it from. And the idea of when you're moving a piece on this board, on this grid, that piece moves X spaces, where X equals the number of pieces on its starting square when it starts its move. So if I have a guy standing alone on this square, on his turn, he can only move 1 square forward, or 1 square in any direction. But if at the start of his move, there are 4 pieces on that square, he can move 4 squares. And then the next guy on that square then can only move 3, and the next one 2, and the next one 1. Okay.
And that mechanic, just having played this, is awesome.
Yeah, and Pompeii really kind of neuters that. I mean, you just kind of start to get the feeling of that when that game ends. And you start to get an idea of the strategy of that. And the downside of that is that when you're using that mechanic in Pompeii, it's to get people out of the city. And so, and thematically it works for Pompeii, because... You can get people out quickly in the beginning, but then the more lava comes out there, the tougher it gets to get out there, and the slower people move.
Right.
And so it works thematically for Pompeii, but it's kind of a bummer, because just as you start to kind of get the hang of how to chain those movements together and help people, the game ends, and you don't have a chance to really get into it. And so this game is kind of inspired by that mechanic and me wanting to use that in a more satisfying way.
Yeah. And I think you did that personally.
So you start the game. Every player has 3 robots, 3 little robot units that they can move around on the board. And that's not a board. The setup of the game is that you have a bunch of tiles. And I don't know if they're cards or the tiles, but I'm calling them square tiles. And when you're setting up the game, On one side of the tile is resource information, you know, what resources are available in this spot. Mm-hmm. And those are mechanical, electrical, and plasma.
Yep.
Okay, those are the three resources. Mechanicals are the most common, electrical is a middle common, and plasmas are rare. Okay. So one side of the tile tells you what's in that spot, that part of the ship. The back of the tile is some kind of artwork. And the artwork is either basic or detailed. The basic artwork is just like general, you know, ships plating, you know, the outside of the Starship Enterprise, just simple gray
hull
plating. Yeah.
Yeah.
The detailed tiles have cool features on them, like exhaust ports and tanks.
Or you said maybe a cockpit.
A cockpit windows. Yeah, yeah, that kind of stuff.
Guns, I guess you could do.
Maybe guns, yeah.
Cannons.
Something like that. Kind of cool spaceship details.
Right.
And so at the start of the game, depending on how many players there are, what you do is you have the stack of each tile, and then you shuffle those up, and then you take a certain number of tiles of basic and a certain number of tiles of detailed types. And then you basically just lay them out on the table so it looks like a cool spaceship.
Which is so trivial, but so cool.
Yeah.
Like, when we did it, like, watching you do it, even with just the tiles, I was like, oh, that'll be really fun when you've got, like, detail. Like, really, put the thrusters here, and, you know.
Yeah, right. And so that part, it's a way to make setup of the game fun and make it different every time,
mm-hmm.
also. And so that, it'd be cool if it was over there. It also it means you can do things like you can kind of maybe make the Millennium Falcon if you want.
Yep.
Or you can make the Enterprise if you want. Or, you know, the Battlestar Galactica or whatever. You know.
The Serenity or something like that.
Yeah. So you can kind of lay out these tiles to look like ships, you know, or just some kind of cool spaceship thing.
And I mean, it would be easy in the artwork if somebody was publishing this to mimic, like, the cockpit style of the Falcon, right?
Sure.
I mean, like, because that's not... Yeah. I mean, like, just the cockpit style. Like, oh, it's, you know... So you're like, oh, put that on the side, check that out, you know?
Yeah, so...
That'd be cool.
So I really like that idea. That was kind of a fun concept. And then every player gets some kind of a... Gets, like, a docking port where your salvage ship kind of lands. But those docking ports on the ship are universal. Basically, they're starting points for your units to start from, and you can unload, after your robots collect resources, they can unload their resources back to the ship at one of those points. But I can unload at any of the points that are out there on the table, okay? And it's not mine and my own protected one. It's, you can unload at anybody's output location, because the idea is that, you know, the player is in the spaceship and, you know, the salvage ship kind of floating around, and he's just going to attach to the ship and let the robots unload it wherever is convenient, you know.
Right. So because we had instances where you'd go way to the front of the ship and we were at the back,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, oh wow, this would be cooler and fast, mm-hmm. and the game would go faster if they were in more spots.
Right. And it's not just that you can dock anywhere on the ship, but there would be a X number of specific ports where X equals the number of players. Okay.
Right.
And then you start the game with three units that are just kind of at your starting docking location. On your turn, you have three actions you can choose from for each of your units, and each of your units gets one action. Okay, you can move them, you can flip a tile, or you can pick up one resource from that location. Okay, and you can only flip a tile if your unit is standing on it. And you can only pick up a resource from a location if your unit is standing on it. Okay. So remember, I already talked about movement. So basically, at the start of the turn, on your first turn, your first unit that you can move three spaces. But the next I can only move two, and the next I can only move one. Okay. So that's movement aspect. Of course, you also get those movement bonuses when you're on when you share a tile with an opponent.
Right.
You know, so if I move on to a tile and Jason has two guys there and they don't move off of that tile, then my guy is going to be able to move three spaces later.
Right.
Okay. So you're doing that. You're flipping tiles. You're collecting resources. What do you do with the resources? Well, there's two different things you can do with resources. Number one, you can just cash them in. You can basically sell them to the black market, because this is all kind of under the table, shady salvage operation here.
Right.
Sell them to the black market. Mechanicals are worth one space buck.
space bucks.
Electricals are worth two space bucks, and plasmas are worth three space bucks. And it's just straight up, you can at any time you want on your turn, you can sell resources that you have returned to your main ship, to your salvage ship. Okay. If it's in the cargo capacity, if your robot that's out there is still holding resources, it's not yours. You don't have it saved. You can't sell it off yet. Oh, and your robots can only carry 4 resources at a time.
Right.
But if they're on the same square, they can pass resources to each other freely.
Right. Yeah. And that's a free action.
It's a free action.
So, like, if I start my turn and I've got 3 resources, other dude doesn't have any, I can give him those 3, let him move away, and then I can move over and keep doing other stuff.
Exactly.
Cool.
Right. So you get space bucks. You can spend those space bucks to buy more units. Okay. You can have a total of 5 robots out there working for you. And I should have made a note. We're recording this on my phone, and all my notes are on my phone.
Right.
So I don't have the exact number. I want to say it was 6 space bucks.
It was 6 to buy a new guy. Right.
Yep. So 6 space bucks for a new robot, up to 5, maximum of 5. You can spend, I think it was 2, to freeze an enemy unit. Basically,
yes,
knock them over.
That was awesome.
That was super good for strategy.
If you, say I have 2 guys on a tile and you have a guy, and I open the tile, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you haven't went yet, you're going to get to steal stuff before I do, theoretically, mm-hmm. right? So I freeze you, and then the next turn, my 2 guys can raid the crap out of that tile. There's
right.
nothing you can do about it.
Right.
And that's really fulfilling when it happens.
It was cool, right. So with the freeze, basically you knock him down, and then the only thing he can do on his next turn is stand up again.
Yeah, that's his action.
Right. So you can spend, I think it was 3 to peek under a tile. Maybe it was only 2 for Topeka.
I think it was 2.
Might have been 2. So Topeka, where you can basically look at a tile, you can pick it up, look at what's underneath there, and put it back down without
right.
showing anybody else. So you know it's there, but no one else does.
Right. And we never did that.
We didn't do that. Maybe it would be more beneficial if it's just to flip a tile for free. And not for free, but you spend that 3 and you can flip a tile, and everybody knows what's there. Maybe that's better.
In that case, though, make it like 1.
That's true.
Pay 1 to flip a tile.
Yeah.
Well, I see, though, but if I paid 1 to flip a tile... And then move to said tile. And then if you made it unoccupied, it's balanced. Then I think if you said
any unoccupied
tile, because if I'm on the tile, I could pay 1 to flip it and then just start mining it, and that's not fair. But
yeah,
that's is 1 unoccupied tile makes it easier.
So I would call it scan, basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, you pay 1, you can flip over or reveal any 1 unoccupied tile.
Okay. Yeah.
And when you flip that over, then you put the appropriate resource cubes on
right.
it,
I think, right? That, I think, is cool, because that's something else that speeds up the game, right?
Yeah, right.
If I'm like, gosh, I'm not sure where to go. Okay, I'm going to flip 2 tiles and just see. All right, that one's better. We're going for that.
Yeah, I like that. I'll do that, I think. So. Yeah, okay. And one thing that we tried before was to upgrade cargo capacity of your units. And I think it was 4 to mm-hmm. add, 4 to take it from 4 to 5, and then 4 again to go from 5 to 6. We didn't use that in our testing. I might. That's the kind of thing that I might throw in there at Unpub just to see if people use it or not.
Right.
But we'll see. So that's a thought on that.
Do you have to pay to move your spaceship? We had talked about that was a suggestion.
Oh yeah, to pay
pay 1 to redock your spaceship at another one, and you just have a little coin or something that was your spaceship.
Yeah, we should do that. That would yeah. I like that idea too.
Because then it's not free to go anywhere. It's a choice.
Yeah.
But and it thematically it makes a ton of sense.
Sure,
you got to pay a resource to switch from right. one to the other.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's definitely something to do too. Then, so that's what you can spend your space bucks on. But the other thing you can do spend resources on is if you don't cash them in for space bucks, you can trade them for fuel. Okay, and this is a new thing that I actually haven't even tested yet.
Right.
So to tell you here. I identified those values. Mechanicals are 1, electricals are 2, and plasmas are 3. On the actual tiles, the basic tiles have a total value of 4, and the detailed tiles have a total value of 6 on them. Okay, and just different combos of resources that add up to 4, add up to 6 on the backs of those
mm-hmm.
tiles. Okay, so that's how those resources are distributed. There are 4 fuel cards that are out there, and
at any given time.
You have 4 fuel card types.
Oh.
Okay.
Right.
And there are multiple cards of each type, but there's only 4 specific types. In order to claim the fuel card, you need to trade in a certain number of resources for that card type. So, and each of those card types add up to 6.
Okay.
So, for example, at one end, the fuel card requires 2 plasmas. 2 plasmas are worth 3, that adds up to 6. That will get you 8 victory points. 8 fuel units, which
right.
is those are how we're dragging victory points. Okay, so there's only 2 of those cards in the game. Actually, did I say? I think I actually should have put. I don't recall now. I don't think it was 8. I think I had that at 6.
Okay.
Whatever. I, again, don't have my notes here in front of me.
Right. Close
So,
enough.
Yeah. So, you know what? I think it was 4. I think it was just 4 victory points for that. But there's only 2 of those cards. At the other end, you can trade in 6 mechanicals to get 1 victory point for one of those cards. And there's 8 of those cards available to pick up.
Okay.
Okay. And so what you're doing then is you're deciding, do I want to use these resources for money so I can do more stuff during the game, or am I going to trade in these resources for victory points? The game ends when either all those fuel cards are claimed or the last tile is flipped over. Any resources that your robots out there are holding on to that they've not returned yet to your base are lost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can then buy victory points at 6 space bucks to 1 victory point, and then whoever has the most victory points is the winner.
Cool.
So that's
pretty simple.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
And in terms of scaling, you know, I think I already said that. The number of players will determine how many of those tiles you put out there on the table.
And how many ports there are.
And how many ports there are.
And you're thinking 4 players?
I'm thinking 4 players. I'd like to try it with 5 or 6, but right. I think that just might get too crazy.
Might be too much.
Yeah.
Though, the one thing that would be interesting with more players is the game would be bigger, but might actually go faster because you might get like 4 or 5 people clumped on a tile and people are just moving like crazy.
True.
So...
True. So, yeah, so that's something to look at. But, yeah, so Galactic Scrappers is the game. Excuse me. And, I mean, so far so good. It's got, I mean, this is one of the tightest, most stressful development windows that I've ever had on something.
Right. Yeah, because you need to be able to, if you want to do game capture components, you need to have them out in the next week. Here.
Basically have a week to, because I also want to do standees for this.
Right. Oh, yeah, because this would be great with standees.
Yeah. So I think I can do standees and I can do the tiles. I think I'll probably just do them as square cards, honestly, mm-hmm. from Game Crafter. But apart from that, I mean, I don't really know what else. I think you know, I'm going to need player boards that would kind of represent right. little ships and things. I don't know exactly how I'm going to do that. But standees and cards, basic cards for the ship layouts.
You know what might be cool for the... If you're doing square cards, they also have circular cards. That might be cool for the detailed sections. Like a bulbous cockpit or, like, jets off the back or something. It would make them very easily stand out.
It's true.
You know? So, just a thought. Something different. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Try and explore different card shapes for different types.
Yeah, it might get confusing, though.
Well, plus, I guess then you couldn't put detail stuff in the inside, which would be annoying.
Yeah.
It'd always have to be on the outside. So, yeah, that's bad. Never mind. I wasn't thinking about it. I was just thinking of, like, cockpits and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway. So, yeah. Galactic Scrappers. There you go. That's the basic idea. Hopefully, this weekend, I can play a 4-player game. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. And, yeah. I don't really have anything else to say about it, I guess.
Cool. All right. Well, it's exciting stuff, guys. Unpub's coming up.
Sure is.
Whether we're ready or not.
What are you guys bringing to Unpub? Email us, tweet us, tell us what you're bringing.
Yeah.
Love to hear about it.
Sure we'll be able to check it out when we're there. So give us a heads up.
So I guess that's gonna do it for today. Again, sorry about the terrible audio quality and the situation.
Winter is almost done, so that will, you know.
Yeah, it's bright and sunny and clear out there right now.
Still lots of snow everywhere, but.
Yeah, it's cold.
It's supposed to be in the 50s or 60s next week again, so.
It's nuts. What a weird winter.
It was 60 one day, and the next day was a blizzard, so.
Yeah.
That happened.
Michigan, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at JASlingerland. I am at poorly_design. Like us on Facebook. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher and anything else. Call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. And don't forget about Saloon Tycoon on Kickstarter right now. Just $40 plus $10 shipping gets you a copy of the game. It's a steal. We have a ton of stretch goals unlocked and more to come. It's super, super cool.
Scorpions in the box.
Scorpions in the freaking box.
Scorpions in the Dizam Bizox.
There it is.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know. So, scorpions.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Yeah! One time!
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Just another quick Saloon Tycoon update. We are at, Sunday, March 6th, 2016. It's 11 a.m. We've got 9 days to go, 785 backers, and our total is at $49,672. So we are just a few backers away from hitting 50 grand and unlocking the next stretch goal. Thanks again, everybody, for your kind support, and keep it up. We got about a week and a half left to really push this thing home and make it to that 70 grand target. I know we can do it with your help. Thanks so much, guys. Bye-bye.